Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 242.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, ignition sequence. Started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
And welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week we are bringing back Bond. That is correct. You heard the little music flare at the beginning there that always tells you it is the return of James Bond. And I'm joined this week not only by my semi-regular co-host and co-host for most things Bond, John Ringer. Hello, John.
Hello, man.
But we're also joined this week by a very special guest, the new, relatively newish art director and cover artist for White Rocket Books, one Jared Albrich. Welcome aboard, Jared.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm pleased to have both of you guys tonight because we're going to talk about some gadgets. We're going to get down into the nitty-gritty of the gadgets that James Bond and maybe some of his opponents have used over the years. And we have a comprehensive list, but we're going to skim through it and hit the highlights, I think, mostly, whatever you guys want to comment on. And we're going to try to run through all the movies if we can in about an hour or so. We'll see how it goes. These things always run over. But before we get into the first one, we'll start with Dr. No, a movie that has relatively few, if any, gadgets. But I want to first throw around the room here. Jared, what do you think about when you think about Bond gadgets, and why is this an interesting topic that'd be fun for the folks to listen to us talk about?
I guess when you threw this to me originally, I thought we were going to talk about Inspector Gadget, so I'm a little off here. I had a whole thing about Penny and Brain and Dr. Claw. No, seriously. James Bond and gadgets, you know, they go together like peanut butter and jelly. Gadgets are such a part of the series, although, like you pointed out, they're not necessarily in every movie, but they are such a significant part of the series that you can meet someone who's not a neck deep, you know, Bondophile like myself, and I assume you guys are as well. But they will remember the gadgets. They might not necessarily be able to name the movies in order, or who sang all the theme songs, or you know who the set designer was, which is Ken Adam, by the way. Yes. But they'll come away and they'll say, "Oh, I remember that briefcase that had the gold coins in it and the knife, and I remember that watch, you know, that had the super strong magnet." It's just those standout things. It just makes Bond. You know, you compare it to like Jason Bourne movies are very similar, but gadget free. So that doesn't ever stick in anybody's mind when they think of Jason Bourne movies. The gadgets really, really make Bond stand out. So that's my take on it.
And John, let me further expand on that. And Jerry, if you want to come back on this, that how important are the gadgets? Because some people prefer Bond to just do Bond stuff and not rely maybe on the technical things, the assistance of the mechanical stuff. Others think that's really what makes it roll. Where do you stand on the gadget debate?
I think
It does separate Bond. I mean, I think it's one of the unique things about the movies, and I think it's one of the things that makes his character, you know, not just a super spy, but makes him James Bond. But I also think some movies they make the gadgets are like a crutch, a get out of jail free card too much maybe, or they're too cute or whatever. And so I like it when they're more practical kind of things and not, you know, some of the over the top stuff with the kind of get out of jail free card ones. But I love when they have ones that are really like practical, useful kind of items as opposed to like a vehicle or just a weapon or something.
Well, before we, in case we forget, and by the way, I'll for the record, I kind of agree with you. I like back in the 60s that they had some movies, and in some into the 70s, where they had some movies where the gadgets were really over the top and just goofy. But I like that now, because one of the things I always like to say about the Bond series is when you take the movies one at a time, like as they're coming out, and you only get one every year, and then every 2 years, and then every 3 years, and in some cases every 6 years, when you take them one by one, a goofy Bond is disappointing. But see, when I go back and watch the whole series over again every year, I appreciate the goofy, like the Roger Moore goofy ones, because it's a nice break. I don't want them to all be the same. So I'm like, oh, now we're to the goofy Moore ones. Okay, now we're to the more serious, you know, whatever. So I kind of like that in some movies there are very few gadgets, and in some movies it's just ridiculous, you know. Jared, I didn't get your thoughts on that. So how do you kind of see that, Jared?
I think we're all kind of in agreement. I think the gadgets are a defining characteristic of the series. When people say Bond needs to have zero gadgets, I say, well, then you're looking for a Jason Bourne movie.
Exactly.
Basically. I mean, I just feel like if he doesn't have a gadget or two, it's not necessarily Bond. But I also agree with you guys. It doesn't need to be outlandish. You know, what's really cool is I believe in Washington, D.C., they have the National Spy Museum. Yeah, that's right. You were up there not too long ago. August. And you can see a lot of these gadgets that even sometimes you see the movie, you go, that's goofy. And then they go, oh, it's real. And you're like, whoa. You know, yeah. So yeah. Sometimes the gadgets get a little bit dumb and unrealistic, I guess is the word I'm looking for. But yeah, a good well grounded gadget. It separates Bond from the rest of the films. So I think we're kind of all in the same camp. Yes, gadgets. No goofy gadgets, but then we. I don't think any of the three of us get mad when we see a goofy gadget. We just go, you know, it's like you said, it's one of those goofy Roger Moore films, which are still fun in their own right. If every movie is on Her Majesty's Secret Service and depressing, then the series is not fun anymore.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to think the if I try to think of which gadgets actually like make me angry. I mean, the only one that actually even remotely does would be maybe the gondola car in Moonraker.
Yes.
That was like a hovercraft that came up out of the water to drive it down the road. And the pigeon does the infamous double take. That was really Roger Moore at his height, you know, or his depth, yeah, you know what I mean?
Well, you've landed on what I think is the goofiest Bond movie, period. But we're not here to talk about that.
No,
but I agree with you, because you have to look at a gadget and you have to say, you know, somebody spent time and effort to research this, because it's going to be something of a common use item. So like you compare it to like let's say the keychain from Living Daylights. That's a cool common use thing that every spy should have on them. But like they spent how many thousands of dollars or pounds, to be more correct, developing an inflatable gondola escape vehicle, like just in case he's in Italy, you guys, we need to have this on hand.
That's right.
It makes zero sense. No.
But it did make the pigeon double take, and it was worth it just for that. So, all right, last thing, I got to get, because we may forget the end, off the top of your head, before we start digging into them, what would you each say, let me start with John, what is your favorite Bond gadget and from what movie that just comes to your mind immediately?
The wristwatch in Moonraker that shoots the little darts.
Yes, me too. I love that. I love it. All right, so that's ours. Although I gotta say, I do really like the submarine Lotus, the underwater white car in Spy Who Loved Me. Jared, what's your favorite Bond gadget off the top of your head right now at the beginning?
Well, that's funny because, like, when you say gadget, I kind of make it think it's something he should be able to carry with him. So, because if we're allowed vehicles, it's the Aston Martin DB5 from Goldfinger all day, every day.
That's fair.
Nonstop. Because I look at gadgets as from the view of not necessarily if it's cool, but which one would I like to own? Like, that's the one I want. And off the top of my head, it's probably the magnetic Rolex with the spinning dial from Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die, yeah. I think part of the problem is that the comprehensive list that I found online included things like the cello case from The Living Daylights as a gadget. I'm just like, no, that's not a gadget. No.
So, I feel like if it's not developed by Q, then it's not a gadget. That's kind of like my rule.
Well, that's my favorite. My favorite one they actually list is when I remember it was Pierce Brosnan or Roger Moore, because sometimes they blur together. but there was this moment where one of them is looking at different things in Q's lab, and he says, "And what is this, Q?" And it's a salad, and Q says, "That's my lunch." And they listed that in the gadget list.
That is that's just to show my bond nerdness. I'm pretty sure that's GoldenEye, and it was a sub sandwich. You know, I don't want to be Mr. Quick to correct on the podcast.
My lunch. But
that's my lunch. So it's definitely a great line.
All right, here we go. We're gonna start out with the movies. We're gonna go through all 24. Hopefully, we'll get this in this total of about an hour. I'll throw out some here from our list. And we can just discuss any of them that really stand out as, you know, noteworthy. And if it's not, then just we'll let it go by. The only thing that I included from Dr. No was the cyanide cigarette that the chauffeur that worked for Dr. No chewed on to kill himself. There were things like Geiger counters, but that's not a Bond gadget. You know, that's just a tool, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anything I'm missing from Dr. No, or anything you want to say about the cyanide cigarette? I guess that was new in 1962, huh?
I guess, and I guess we didn't really see people carrying Geiger counters around a lot either. But like you said, not really a gadget, but you know, it's Dr. No. They're just kind of finding their footing, so gadgets weren't there yet.
Yeah.
So not much to really say about Dr. No, unless you consider a tarantula a gadget.
That's true. Well, you know what though? The big dragon tank thing, which didn't translate well to the screen. They had must have had like $20 left in the special effects budget when they decided to make that. What are your thoughts on Dr. No, John? Gadget wise?
That's really it. We got plenty other gadgets to talk about. They went low without gadgets the first movie to kind of, you know, and they kind of built it up from there.
Well, oh crap, that just everything went, oh gosh, hold on, my view just went bananas. What the heck?
I've still got it up if you want me to take over hosting duties. You know,
I just don't understand what just happened. Okay, that was just weird. Okay, from Russia with Love, they absolutely ripped the lid off, though. There were all kinds of cool gadgets. Because from Russia with Love is, out of the early Bond movies, out of the Connery Bonds, it is the most spy movie, don't you think?
Yes,
I agree. It's the most sneaking around doing spy stuff, rather than fighting a supervillain. There's not really a super villain in it other than Blofeld, but all he ever does is just pet the cat. So I think that the main thing we got to talk about is the briefcase. What are some of the things that stand out about that briefcase?
Well, I mean the tear gas, the gas that when you open it wrong sprays out of you, and then also I always think about the throwing knives that pop out. So
I like that it has.
That's
money.
That's funny. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I thought I liked that it had money. I kept thinking at the time, what is that for? I mean, like, when you watch From Russia with Love the first time, if you know the Bond tropes, you're thinking, okay, everything they show is going to be used at least once. So he pulls out a strip of gold coins, and I'm thinking, what is he going to do with those? And he tries to bribe Red Grant with them. So they found a use for a strip of gold coins. I'm like, son of a gun. Okay. What did you think about the briefcase, Jared?
I love the briefcase. In fact, when you asked me what my favorite gadget was, it was definitely toss up between that and the Rolex. I love the briefcase because it is the most, like you kind of said, spy-y thing I think that he's ever had. It's the gadget that he had that sort of makes the most sense that a real spy would carry with him. You know, the like you said, the tear gas if you open it wrong, the throwing knife when you need it, the gold coins to get yourself out of a jam, you know, whether you need to buy a ticket or bribe somebody or whatever. Everything in it makes sense. As opposed to the floating gondola car, the briefcase totally makes sense. And then if you remember inside the briefcase, also when he first got it, was that breakdown sniper rifle, which was also completely – kick ass. I don't know if I can say kick ass on the show.
Yes, you can.
It was it was completely awesome. I remember being just a kid and seeing that and going, "Oh my gosh, it's an entire rifle that fits in the little thing." So I mean, just everything about it was felt legit and practical. I mean, when I say legit, I base that off of all the spying and espionage I've done. But yeah, it's it seems
in your experience, it's all very real, true to life. In other words, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I liked how when you had the briefcase, all the stuff kind of fit into the walls of the briefcase, except the little talcum powder bomb, which snapped magnetically to the side. So you had all that empty space. You had all that stuff you're carrying around, and yet the thing's almost empty. So you had room to put your rifle and then, you know, your Playboy magazine if you're George Lazenby's Bond and whatever else, you know. So let's see.
Hey, Connery was more of a hustler kind of guy.
Well, of course, my dear. Hey, let's put it this way. We were just watching Goldfinger a little while ago. Mira and I were working our way through him again. And Bond comes out in that little blue onesie like Mira wore when she was a baby. And I'm thinking, you can look butt-kickingly awesome in a blue – terry cloth onesie, you are the coolest guy on earth at that time, you know? He could have come out in a dress and been, you know, you'd be like, dang, man, he's tough. Well, let's see. He had a pager. I guess that was when he was with what's her name out at the lake, you know, at the beginning. What's her name? Dang it. I just talked about her on Twitter the other day that she was who she should have been the woman in Tomorrow Never Dies. Terry Hatcher's character.
Her real name is Eunice Gladson, Gayson, something like that. That's her real name. And
Sylvia Trench
is her name in the movie.
So he was out there making out with Sylvia Trench when the pager went off. I guess, again, that was new in 1963. He had a bug detector to sweep the room. I'm going to run through a few little ones here, and then we can talk about any of them y'all want to. Oh, he had the reel-to-reel recorder, audio recorder in that camera around his neck, which showed you how big cameras used to be like that. And he was recording Tatiana, where she has that great line where she's like explaining the Lecter or the Lecter machine. She's like, "Oh, James, will you make love to me in London?" "Yes, yes, night and day. Now move on."
No, I gotta jump in and say the best part of that scene is when he says, "There was this one time when M and I were
in
on
Tokyo.
A mission."
In Tokyo.
And M just shuts it off and goes, "That'll be all, Miss Money Penny. That moment gets the hardest laugh from me at any moment in a James Bond film.
It's awesome.
Every time I see it, I crack up.
It's so, because it's so against the M's personality. Let's see. There's the dagger pointy shoe that Rosa Klebb has. That becomes kind of a cliche.
I really like those. I thought it was a cool idea, and it's
she got her kicks.
Yeah, she's had her kicks.
I love the Garrote watch. The Red Grant's watch has a wire that comes out. That's his preferred way to kill people.
That is. I'm going to tangent on you real quick, but I don't know if you ever watched that old 80s TV show. What was it called? Sledgehammer. Did you ever watch Sledgehammer?
I never saw it, but I know what you're talking about.
The guy had a Garrote watch, and he goes to kill Sledgehammer, and he pulls it out. It's right out of James Bond. He pulls it out like Red Grant does, and Sledgehammer goes, "This is no time to floss." And so every time I see that, I go, "This is no time to floss." Well, I know it's dumb, but.
I think he could garrote you to death and check the time at the same time. So he just glances at his wrist while he's choking you. So, and there was the decoder, but that's just like a thing that was actually semi-real in the war. And it's an interesting thing about the decoder. It was actually called a Spectre decoder in the books, and they had to change it because they'd called They'd use that name for the evil organization. So quite a few kind of small-level gadgets, but cool ones, right? I mean, those are the ones that we like, right? I don't think there's any of them in that crowd that we don't like. Would y'all agree?
I agree with that.
Absolutely.
So that's the kind of gadget we like, is these spy craft, just slightly ahead of the current trend. You know, not an invisible car or anything, just slightly ahead of current stuff you have. Well, then we get to Goldfinger. We get the gun back again. Tilly Masterson uses it. There's various trackers and homing beacons and stuff that Bond has in his shoe and everything. And those are, okay, again, that's that standard spycraft type stuff that's believable. Oddjob, of course, has the bowler hat with the blade in it. And the only other one I really included from Goldfinger, other than the Aston Martin, of course, if you want to count vehicles, the Aston Martin is like the ultimate gadget, like you were saying, Jerry. Mm-hmm. And the other one is the big laser gun, and we get a lot of big laser guns in the Bond series to come, and kind of ripped off in the Pink Panther later on, too, I believe. So what do y'all think about the Goldfinger gadgets? Any one of them you really want to talk about other than maybe the Aston Martin?
I love Oddjob's hat.
Yeah, yeah. That's a pretty original weapon. I don't know who thought of that.
You know, the only thing that really kind of jumps out at me when I was thinking about this the other night on Goldfinger was, you know, the tracking device was actually very cool and very practical, very spy practical. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it'll allow an agent to stop off for a quick one while he's on the chase. But I always thought it was funny that, like, he pulls it up in his car. And it's the 60s. They don't have like digital GPS. It's right. Like microfiche maps. And I'm like, how much microfiche is in that car? So I've often wondered. But it was cool and practical. You know, again, practical gadgets are always the best. And I think, yeah, a tracking device fits and it made it very cool.
Yeah, those early 60s Bonds, early mid 60s Bonds, they really did go for stuff that a secret agent would really, you know, want to have. They were not yet thinking way outside the box. They were thinking inside the little briefcase, you know, and I think that was very effective. But John and I talked about this, I think, when we talked about Goldfinger last year, is that can you imagine if you were a little kid, probably Mira's age, when Goldfinger came out, how much you would have just wanted an Aston Martin toy to play with that does all that stuff?
Yeah, oh, my gosh, I write a blank check.
Yeah,
I write one right now. Again, I'm a tangent on you here, just real quick, but I've often wondered why, with the success of 3¾-inch Star Wars and GI Joe figures, why there was never a Bond line. All the vehicles, all the villains, like it just like why was that never sold? And the Aston Martin DB5 would be the first one to go. I mean, it's fantastic.
That's a good question.
Yeah, you do if you do the cars, you do the Aston Martin first, you do the Lotus. What else would you do? I want the little car that flips upside down in For Your Eyes Only that rolls down the mountainside.
Yes, yes, yes.
The little
yes,
boxy
yes.
car. That's that rolls. Fine.
That was the next one I was going to say when you were making your list.
Now you could make some cool ones from the Daniel Craig. That's for sure. Just cool hot rod. You know those really nice super.
Probably when he drove that Ford Focus. You probably want that Ford Focus thing. sometimes Her Majesty's on a budget, yo.
Yeah, that's so. Right. But austerity, man. After the war, heck yeah. We've been watching The Queen. We know about that. So Thunderball the next year really gets it rocking with some little more exotic things. We get it's doing it again.
Thunderball has, I'm just going to go ahead and jump in and tell you, has my least favorite gadget of all time.
All right, which one is that?
Well, no, you know what? That's not fair. It is not my least favorite gadget, but I always thought the pill was weird, but it's not my least favorite one. It's not. I always thought the homing pill was weird. Like I was like, every time he swallows that pill, I go, is he getting cancer?
I know. Don't worry, 007. It's powered by a very low-range radium radioactive core. It disintegrates inside the body in something like 150,000 years. Should be perfectly fine. If you have any rectal bleeding later, don't worry about it. It's a small side effect.
Good gosh.
Well, I mean, at least we now know why, after being with all those women, that he never had any kids. It's because that damn pill.
Talk about a pill. Ooh, that is a pill. Yeah, well. And, he also
unless
had
you
one
follow of, novel continuity, he had a child in the novel. Spoiler.
Oh, anyway, that's in Japan. In Japan, of all things, yeah.
Correct. Very good.
I think that the little air supply thing, his little miniature oxygen tanks, that was actually so cool and it seemed so practical that I believe some organization, some government, either Britain or America, somebody actually approached the special effects guys asking them how to make that. And they're like, well, it doesn't work. it's like two CO2 cartridges glued onto a, you know, the respirator core. But it looks like something you could, you know, you'd get. It looks like something you'd buy in the scuba diving shop, doesn't it?
It does. I got to be honest with you, when you sent the list out and it said air supply, I thought it was going to be like, I'm all out of love. I'm so right. Lost without you.
It only works in Australia.
Now I know. Yeah. But that one did look cool and practical.
When he's going through the swimming pool with the sharks and everything, right, I think, at Largo's place.
Yeah, he busts that out. That's a classic Bond moment. I don't know if you've ever done the behind the scenes on that. But, you know, like, did you know about, like, Sean Connery was in the water with the shark, and they were like, oh, we got this glass plate that'll protect you. And the shark totally went around the glass plate. And when you see that shot of him, like, jumping back, like, holy crap, because that shark, that's live. That's real. Because that real shark just totally evaded the glass plate.
That's very simple. We didn't talk about that one, but we did talk about the alligators in Live and Let Die that nearly took his foot off. Yeah, that was real, too. So that's awesome.
And on the real gadget side, the rocket jetpack thing, yes, in that movie is actually it was a real device.
Oh man,
when we were kids, actually being used.
When we were kids, those rocket pack jetpacks were the coolest thing ever, and they really existed.
Mm-hmm.
It totally looks like science fiction, but it's real. Isn't that funny that the thing that Bond uses to fly over the city is like the most practical, actually, you could go get it of all of his gadgets pretty much in any of the movies. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. I think that they had it, and they said, we've got to figure out some way to use this in the movie. And so they basically wrote that entire opening scene around him using a jetpack, a rocket pack, whatever you want to call it, to get out. Because he does, you know, he's trapped on the roof, right? And so he flies. He has it with him already. It's not like he hides it under his coat like Captain America hiding his shield.
That's what makes it weird. Because he had to have been like, well, just in case I have to escape by the roof.
Yeah.
Put this big-ass jetpack up here.
And if I don't, we'll just leave it up there.
It weighs like 100 pounds or whatever. That was just insane.
He must have gotten there like 2 days beforehand.
Yeah.
Lugged that thing up there.
Yeah, man. That's crazy. But it worked, though. It looks great. That's the thing about Thunderball. Not a lot of it makes sense, but it looks great. So, he had that cool underwater pack that was kind of like an underwater rocket pack that had spear guns. It had a booster propeller for him. That was pretty neat.
It like constantly trailed like yellow dye, so you could always tell which one was James Bond swimming around.
It was like the smallest submarine ever. It was so small you couldn't even get inside of it. You just had to hang on to it and let it drag you around. But that's pretty cool. A couple other things in it. There was a cassette recorder hidden in a book. I barely even remember that, but the cassette recorder is not exactly cutting-edge Bond Q technology. It's a cassette recorder, Mr. Bond. Bond, pay attention now. This reel puts out the blank tape, and this reel takes... Fascinating, Q.
Is it 8-track?
Oh, God. It plays all of ABBA's greatest hits, Mr. Bond. Bond.
No, it plays Air Supply. We just covered that. It plays Air Supply 007.
Cost, pay attention, 007. That's pretty much Thunderball. I don't think there's... Are we missing anything from Thunderball? It needs a postmortem. All right. You Only Live Twice. You had to think there'd be a few cool gadgets in it because it is kind of the over-the-top Connery one. You know, this is my favorite Bond. I make no apologies about it. It's my favorite Bond movie. But it's... And in part because it is the over-the-top. It is the most cliched, the most over-the-top of the Sean Connerys, but there are a few things in it. Like, there's the cigarette where you light it and it shoots a rocket out. He shoots the guy in Blofeld's control room with it, right? To that seems like something that could really exist.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
You just have to get the fire to go around from in front of the projectile to behind it without the projectile falling out with the ash, right? Because you're not going to light it from the other end. That's where you got it in your mouth. Mm-hmm. So there'd be a trick to it. You'd have to have like a fuse that burned the other direction quickly and fired it before it... plus, you wouldn't want the backlash to like.
I was going
to
say, you can't have back blast coming into your face when you fire the thing.
Well, Sean Connery loses a lot of charm when he loses three of his teeth, you know, if he used that.
The Surgeon General did warn him, though.
Be the 007 of Tuscaloosa.
That's right. Nice. Well done. Well, like the crossover our shows there. That's good. Now he has a. This is weird. He has a safe. This struck me sort of indirectly. I remember thinking about this. He has a small safe cracker in this movie, and then in Her Majesty's Secret Service, he has one that's like the size of a giant suitcase. It has to be brought up in a cement mixer crane. See, that's just one of several things that, as John and I have talked about before, that points out that On Her Majesty's Secret Service is really barely in sequence with the others because it basically they filmed the book. And all the others, they went off into their own Bond movie universe. So the gadgets in On Her Majesty's Secret Service are more like Fleming described, whereas in the movies they take liberties and just make up whatever crap they want to. So that's why his safe cracking machine gets much larger in two years.
Yeah, he loses technology. It's like the Star Wars movies where in the prequels the spacecraft had that cool like bubble screen for a canopy. Like in the prequels they hop in and it's bubble screen. You're like, I guess they lost that technology exactly. by the time they got to the next trilogy.
That's right. There were gyrojet rocket guns, I'm told, but I don't really have much memory of that.
Yeah, they showed him that when he was training at the Japanese camp. They're like, check out these rocket guns.
Oh, okay.
They're not in it a whole lot.
I kind of deleted out a bunch of the stuff where Q was showing off stuff they didn't actually use in the movie. They just thought it was clever. So, like, you know, the Mexican village where the guy pops up and there's a machine gun, or they throw the bolos that cut the guy's head off.
Right.
I mean, those weren't things Bond actually used, so I don't really consider those Bond gadgets, but if y'all want to mention them at any point. I did like Osato's X-ray desk where he's got the little hidden panels that tell him stuff about the guy sitting in front of him. I think that Christopher Walken had something kind of similar in A View to a Kill, where he was learning stuff about Bond while he was talking to him on the desk or on the computer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that he sees the gun and he sees Bond's cigarettes. He says, "You have to be careful; those will kill you." You know, and he's like, "Oh, your cigarettes," you know. But he meant his gun. So,
well, Mr. Osato believes in the healthy chest.
Yes, he does. What else, John? You chime in here on any from You Only Live Twice that you like or that we're forgetting.
No, I mean it really the safe cracker and the cigarette were the two cool things. I mean in that movie those were the big things. The guns were like you were saying more of a demonstration thing. The actual Bond used them in an exciting way. So,
and of course, y'all know what I love.
Go ahead. I was going to say I have one thing that glaringly overlooked here, and that I would even consider trading the Aston Martin DB5 for was Little Nelly.
Oh, how did we get? I can't believe I must have accidentally deleted it because yes, we haven't talked about the volcano base either, which is kind of a gadget, but it's the greatest lair, I think, the greatest villain lair. But yes, Little Nelly is absolutely one of the top. Mira loves Little Nelly. It's the little mini gyrocopter with the rockets and air mines, and it's just got all kinds of stuff going on. That sucker is awesome. send a message to London. Tell them to send Little Nelly and bring her father. I love who Little Nelly's father is, and it's Q. That's so awesome. Yeah, Little Nelly is a classic, no doubt. I think that's one of the best gadgets in the whole series. But the one we talked about, the volcano base, that I just think that is an iconic lair for a villain. Blofeld in a fake volcano that shoots rockets up is just, I just love that so much. Am I wrong to do that?
No.
Not at all.
No, I honestly think if you grabbed one of those sort of just kind of toe in the water James Bond fans and said, hey, what's the coolest base you can remember? I think probably, 8 out of 10 of them are going to say volcano base. Even better, maybe 4 out of 5 would say volcano base.
Yeah, I mean,
reduce my fraction there. I think volcano base is probably the most famous one.
I think it is. They tried to bring it back in Spectre, but it just wasn't obvious enough. You know, I mean, it was like a meteorite crater instead of a volcano crater, but it just didn't really come across that way, I didn't think. Well, that's all of the we got one more Connery, but first we have to slip over to Honor Majesty's Secret Service, where we find, I think, your favorite that we haven't mentioned, the radioactive lint.
That is actually my least favorite one. I always thought it was the dumbest thing ever. Like, it was like Q's laziest invention. He was like, check this out, I put it in the microwave, now put it in your pocket.
This is another thing that Q came up with that should cause cancer, you know. He uses the big safe cracker. It did give him time to pull the centerfold out of a Playboy, though, which was kind of funny. But not a lot of gadgets in on Her Majesty's. It was a more of a practical, because it was basically the Ian Fleming book come to life. So there weren't a lot of clever visual, you know, gimmicks in it, which is one of the reasons I'd love that movie. Connery came back in 71 for Diamonds Are Forever, and he's got like the mouse trap in his pocket or something that guys searching him grab their fingers.
That is so weird. That's like a Mad Magazine kind of gadget, not a James Bond gadget. Do you know what I'm saying? Like a Tom and Jerry kind of thing.
I feel like a James Coburn movie that was like a knockoff of Bond did something like that.
In like Flint?
Yeah, maybe so.
I think it did. Our Man Flint or In Like Flint, yeah. I think did. I can't remember. I have that vibe, though, like you do.
I need to get those on video. I haven't seen those in forever. I need to try to track those down. He uses a fake fingerprint, which is clever. That's a kind of a spy thing, so that's pretty mm-hmm. cool. He's got the little ring that Q uses to win on the slot machines. That's kind of neat. Q's just not taking the money, though. He's just going around making them all spit out money and walking away, that's so Q. I'm told here he uses suspenders that turn into grappling hooks or something. I don't really remember that.
When he scales the outside of Willard White's tower, he's got like I think it's hidden in his cummerbund.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, he's got all that climbing gear.
Okay.
Yes, he's got whatever crampons or whatever, the little grab things in his I remember what you're talking about, to climb outside of the building to get in there. So
you know what that makes me think of, though? I got to mention this because it's probably not going to come up otherwise. One of my favorite things he does in multiple movies is where his wardrobe changes from like a wetsuit to a tuxedo. He did that at the beginning of Goldfinger. He does it in other places where he pops up out of a secret agent type outfit and he flips a couple of panels on his clothes and he looks like he's at a dinner party. I love that. That's one of my favorite parts of Goldfinger is when he walks in at the beginning, that opening sequence in Goldfinger, he walks in the white dinner jacket after just coming up with a duck on his head, you know?
Yeah, that's great stuff. He does that in Living Daylights.
Yeah.
He goes from tuxedo to sniper's outfit with like a little flick of Velcro. And then it's totally ripped off and unabashedly and wonderfully so ripped off in True Lies. When Arnold Schwarzenegger does it, and it's glorious when he does it too. Every time you're just like, that's awesome.
I love that stuff. Willard White. No, it's actually Blofeld. It's the Charles White Blofeld that I like and everybody else hates, but he has that voice changer. This is Willard White. I love that. I think that's kind of neat. But that's a villain gimmick. The trick elevator. You always got to love the trick elevator. There's several villains in these movies that have the scary trick elevator where you get in and it drops the bottom out or something. I like that. That scared me when I was a kid. I was afraid to get in elevators.
Same here.
Drop me into a shark tank underneath this library or something. Surely keep one down there, right?
Yes. This department store obviously has a shark tank in here or...
If you're caught shoplifting.
I've been in a lot of mediocre elevators over the years, which stopped and broke down or whatever. So, like, the trick elevator thing is like, oh my gosh, you know.
At least it actually works. It doesn't break down, you know.
This is true. This is true.
Is it the trick elevator on the underwater base in The Spy Who Loved Me that he actually, like, braces his feet on the side so when it drops out, he's still in it when the door opens? That seems right. That's been a while since I watched that one.
Yeah, all the elevators are starting to blend together. Doesn't he? I think he braces in the one we're talking about right now, Diamonds Are Forever. I think he braces on the edge, and then it's gas.
Oh, that comes right. Yeah.
So yeah, yeah, I think he's braced a couple of times. I think he's so used to this lifestyle that when he goes to a department store in New York City, he's like completely straddling legs apart, you know, and everybody's like, what are you doing? And he's like, freaking Shark Tanks, y'all.
You never know.
You never know.
They've also got the satellite laser, but that's not a Bond gadget. That's just something that pops up a lot in Bond in movies later on.
Now, we're not doing video Skype, but did you air quote laser just now?
Laser on their freaking head.
Laser.
Laser. We get to the Roger Moore era now, which starts out pretty darn great with Live and Let Die. There's a communicator and a brush, and he's using Morse code too. I feel like it was Bond that was doing that, or somebody else?
I
can remember. I can see the brush and them going, but I can't remember who it was.
Was it him or was it that gal on the island? The black gal. That he was teamed up with. She was CIA.
Yeah.
Was she using it? I can't remember now. That's sad. I feel like I should turn in a piece of my 007 card at this point.
Well, Mira and I will get to that one soon enough. But I think that probably the coolest thing, aside from the stuff that the voodoo guys have, the coolest thing in this movie is the shark air pressurized air bullet. Which is a great idea in theory. It just doesn't work so well, actually, in the movie. Now, this is the funny thing. It actually is more effective blowing up the sofa to make Whisper drop down into the cushions like a lost. You're going to dig for some change, and you're going to find Whisper. I found a flunky. Whoa, it's a henchman. I found 3/4, 2 nickels, an M&M, and a henchman.
And here's Whisper.
Sorry, boss.
Do you want me to open it?
What's that? What's that you
Shall
say?
Shall I open it?
But then when they actually use it on the villain, Katanga,
technology wasn't there.
Not quite. Kananga, not Katanga, Kananga. Mr. Big. Yeah.
Hey, baby.
I do love Live and Let Die so much. Man, it scared me when I was a kid. John and I went all over that last year in our countdown through the movies. But yeah, that one, that's a great thing. I like he has the Felix lighter, which is he has a cigarette lighter that contacts CIA, contacts Felix.
Which gives us, by the way, it leads to one of the great movie lines. I think it's who played Felix Leiter now? I think it was David Hedison again.
Yeah, it was Hedison in that one.
And just when you thought from Dr. No, when James Bond looked at Quarrel and said, "Fetch my shoes," just when you thought that was the most racist thing that was ever going to be said in a James Bond movie, Felix Leiter drops a, "Get me a make on a white pimp mobile."
Oh, God, that's right.
And it makes me laugh every time.
You know, I love Felix, but it is funny that they had him played by Jack Lord in Dr. No, and he was so cool that people are like, man, the American guy is at least almost as cool as Connery. So they immediately replace him with like a, you know, 60-year-old crumpled guy in a hat and smoking cigarettes and everything. And yeah, Hedison is not bad, but he's not, you know, Sean Connery. So I just love that they quickly figured out, you know, Felix is kind of like his best buddy, and you don't need him to be a good-looking, suave ladies' man also. So the only other thing, you have all those voodoo figures that pop up around the island that shoot bullets and stuff. And there's I got to mention the great trap doors in Filet of Soul. I like the booth that rotates around, and then there's the table that drops down into the floor, and they replace it immediately with another table. I just love those. I just think that's
very
so cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Anything else from Live and Let Die, gentlemen?
Oh, I think we did good.
Yeah.
Doesn't he have
the watch
hang glider? Like the water skiing parasail thing.
Too. Does he parasail to that island?
That's kind of really gadgety or something that you couldn't do. But
he does it in several movies. He does that in Moonraker too.
Yeah, and Live and Let Die, he gets drugged over there by Quarrel's son. Takes him over there on a boat, dragging behind a hang glider. You're right.
Yeah.
And then in Moonraker, the boat itself has a hang glider built in for escape. Then, of course, like we said, we didn't talk about the watch. It's one of the coolest gadgets, and it just didn't, from the editing, it didn't show up on our list. But his Rolex watch with the powerful magnet and the spinning cutting blade was fantastic.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That's a great one.
And a very practical item you could use in multiple ways, and he did. That's why the watch is cool.
One thing I always loved about the watch, too, and I totally agree with John, but I remember when Q's like giving him the rundown on the watch. He's like, the magnetic part is so powerful, it could even deflect a bullet at long range. And I'm like, that's awfully handy if you know when someone's shooting at you from 200 yards away. Seems like you wouldn't know that in time.
Yeah.
But he used it a lot, though. He used it to get the bullet. He used it. Well, he almost got that boat to escape the alligators. It was pulling the boat for him. The spinning blade, cut the ropes to let him in solitaire off of that that crane thing. And it was a friggin' Rolex. So, yeah, I love that one. I'm sorry. I get fired up about that one.
Yeah, no, I like that he tried to get the boat and it didn't work because it was tight. I like that his super high tech watch technology was defeated by a rope.
Yes, but he did get a girl's dress off with it. So,
of course he did. There you That's go. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So next up, like a year later, around Christmas, we get the Man with the Golden Gun, and I guess the Golden Gun itself is a pretty darn cool gimmick, even though gadget, even though it is the villain's gadget, it's pretty much what Christopher Lee had to work with in that movie was tattoo and a Golden Gun. as John will attest, I've always said that the Man with the Golden Gun is Fantasy Island if Mr. Rourke had a cool gun.
Yep.
So what do y'all think about that gun?
It's a cool gun for an assassin because it's a cool gun for an assassin because it's assembled from pieces that don't look like a gun.
Yeah.
So you could get into places. It makes sense for an assassin. You could get into places that you couldn't bring a gun into with those items and then assemble it and then shoot somebody and then disassemble it and get out. So in that sense, it really is an intelligent weapon for an international assassin. But at the same time, it's so over the top and it's got the special bullets and stuff. I mean, that's who he is, but
I like that it actually existed. That I think some cigarette lighter company made it for Eon Productions. Like you could actually get it. They built that. I don't think it actually fired a bullet, but it looked pretty cool. So, I mean, it really wasn't the best looking gun when it was assembled together. But then it was coming out of things that weren't supposed to look like a gun, like you said. So it was like a cigarette case and a pin holder and I don't know what all was on it. It had several different pieces that went together to make the gun. But it's pretty iconic, though, isn't it?
It is. My only problem with it was that it relied completely on stealth. John makes a great point. It's fantastic to sneak into a place because you can kind of like sneak in and then assemble it and kill who you need to kill. But the minute things go wrong, you're going to regret that one bullet.
Yeah.
Yes.
You better be real stealthy because if it goes wrong, you're going down, man.
That's part of his shtick, though, is that he only needs one bullet, right? He never misses.
That's true.
Yeah, it's fine. You don't miss the guy you kill, but it's not silent. And the guys you're killing are going to have guards or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
That's true. That's true. And then the gold bullets that went with it. I like. You gotta include the fake nipple.
Oh yeah.
Because Scaramanga has a condition that apparently exists where he has a third nipple, and so when Bond is trying to convince High Fat that he is Scaramanga, he has a fake third nipple glued on. I just think that was hilarious. And High Fat knows it's not him, but he goes along with it to try to trick him or something, right? If I remember correctly.
It is. That's correct, and it is a testament to the sexual rawness of Roger Moore that he's like, check it out, I got a third nipple, and that sexy girl in the swimming pool is like, come on in, you know, she wasn't like WTF 007, she was like, whatever, look at those dimples, come on, man.
I love that High Fat was supposed to have a partner named Low Fat, but they decided not to do that. That's why his name was High Fat. That's awesome.
That was also my nickname in college, but
that was before it became Seafood Surprise or whatever.
Yeah, Seafood Delight.
Yes, that's right. and the Dr. Mrs. Seafood Delight. I love that. That was hilarious.
Yes.
So the Solex Agitator. That was like some kind of little power module for the super laser gun thing, I guess. It was more the MacGuffin of this movie, right, than an actual gadget.
Yeah, it was more of a plot device. A lot of people think remember the Solex Agitator, and I think it's kind of a weird thing. Like it powered his laser. But what's kind of interesting about the Solex Agitator is that it was a new form of power in general. It didn't have to just power a laser; it could power all kinds of stuff. And you got to remember that this movie was made during the energy crisis.
Yeah.
So like new sources of power was on everyone's mind. So that's one of the wonderful things about the Bond films is that they're always sort of at that moment. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a cool way to kind of remember. That's the energy crisis time. That's why the Solex Agitator exists as a plot device in this film.
Yeah, that's right. It sometimes being there when they're timely, it's cool, and sometimes it's just like you roll your eyes, like
give me a make on a white pitmobile.
God, that just never gets old.
Oh, David.
Let's see. They use a tracking device on Scaramanga's car. Of course, the real tracking device he used on the flying car was having Goodnight locked in the trunk.
Best tracking device of all.
Oh, good night, sir. And then there was the precursor for Arcade's Murder World in Marvel, which was Scaramanga's Fun Palace. It was kind of lame in a way, but it was kind of neat. I just can't ever make up my mind what I think about Scaramanga's headquarters, because part of it is just really cool and part of it just seems so cheesy and small. I don't know.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings on it too. And the part that always bothers me is like James Bond realizes he's on camera and he's like, I'm going to get, like, he goes on the scaffolding.
Yeah.
Underneath there, and he like drops his gun, and you're like, "Come on, 007," and you're like, yes. "You're just like, why?" Okay, he's an assassin. You're an assassin. You've got six. He's got one. Just wait for him to come in the room and kill him. My money's on you, 007. Your picture's on the poster. Yeah. You've been on in all the movies before this. I think you're gonna win. So,
yeah.
But yeah. I always thought it was goofy. That part bothers me. He's like, I'm going down in the scaffolding. Like, why did you go? He's just going to hide from the cameras. So why did you go so low to begin with? Like, just go hide behind one of the backdrops.
Yeah, there's a Parker book that's sort of like that, too. One of the Parker novels that Darwin Cook made into a graphic novel before he died is about Parker being trapped in an amusement park and using the rides and stuff as murder weapons to take out these mobsters that are trying to get him. So it's been – I think that book came out before Live and Let Die, too. So I don't know – I mean, before Man with the Golden Gun. So I don't know how much that might have influenced it. But I do like the idea of using an amusement park as a killer trap. By the way, I failed to mention, because I was going to say Scaramanga is one of those characters I would have liked to have seen a solo movie with. And what I was going to mention earlier when we were talking about You Only Live Twice is that Tiger Tanaka and the Japanese Secret Service, they had them some cool gadgets that we never got to see.
Oh,
and
yeah.
because we did get to see like the tunnel that drops Bond down into the chair and everything, and
helicopter magnet.
Oh, the helicopter magnet. Yeah, yeah. So I love Tiger Tanaka. John and I talked about this, that Karen Bay in The Spy Who Loved Me and Tiger Tanaka in You Only Live Twice and Wei Lin in Tomorrow Never Dies, those are the three that I wanted to see other movies starring them, and I've always been disappointed that we never got that.
That's a good point. Also, Tiger Tanaka was the nickname I tried to get in college, but Thai Fat is where it landed.
I think it's
important before we move on, and I know it's not gadget related, but Scaramanga, Christopher Lee, I just want to point out, he's been in the Dracula franchise, the James Bond franchise, the Star Wars franchise, the Lord of the Rings franchise.
Wow.
I think if we could have got him into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, he would have had the perfect acting career.
Yeah.
That guy spread it out, man.
I don't know who he would have played, but yeah, that's exactly true. Oh man, I love Christopher Lee so much. He was in Space 1999. That's my favorite role that he took on. He was an alien on Space 1999.
The Avengers Assemble podcast from White Rocket Entertainment. Creator and fan interviews and discussion about Marvel's Avengers comics, movies, and everything else. From Van Allen Plexico and the Jarvis Heads of AvengersAssemble.net, creators of the best-selling Assembled books and the most fanatical Avengers fans on the face of the earth.
Let's see. So, The Spy Who Loved Me, we're up to 1977. Jaws' teeth certainly are a famous gadget, though he didn't use them as much as he probably could have. Those are pretty scary, though, right? Is this one where he gets the electricity jammed in his face, I believe. Yeah, on the train fight.
On the train fight, yeah.
Bond movies have had some great train fights, and that was definitely one of them. One of the best.
Definitely.
Let's see. What else, John, what else are we thinking of from The Spy Who Loved Me? We haven't got to the car yet.
Well, I mean, he has the watch. Again, there's another watch in Spy Who Loved Me that this one, like, it basically has some kind of message receiving thing, and it prints out a little thing, a little piece of paper.
The teletype.
And it literally, it looks like one of those little label makers from the 1970s that you would put, like, it shoots out that kind of tape out of the side, which is just an insane way to communicate with
Absolutely.
People, I guess. But
I'm imagining the roll of paper you got to fit inside it.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, I gotta change the roll of paper in my watch.
It was like early Twitter, except you got 9 characters or less.
And I'm out of ink. Q sent me a paragraph, and now I'm out of everything. Dang it, Q.
007, your medical
report. Don't be so wordy.
Yeah, don't be exact. Succinct, Q. Come on.
Your medical reports came in. You have chlamydia. Chlamydia what?
It just trailed
can't up. Yeah. Solve that mystery.
007, beware. The guy that you are with is a... And then it just trailed off. I've got to replace the roll of paper. Just a moment.
You accidentally send a message to 009, and he's like, damn it.
You just dumped all my paper.
It's not even for me. I'm not even in Switzerland.
That's great. So yeah, not the best use of a watch in the series. Maybe the worst. Let's see. There's the ski pole gun, which is pretty cool. You could shoot out of your ski pole that you push with. Although I'm thinking that pushing in the snow and dirt with it probably would clog up your barrel a little bit and mess up your shot. Let's see. There was a magnet. It's not much. Stun gas cigarette that Triple X used. I like Triple X. She was pretty cool. That's another character could have had her own. I mean, I didn't love the actress. I'm not a big fan of what's her name, but
Barbara
I like
Bach.
The character. Yeah, Barbara Bach, but I love the character. And then, you know, which is sort of later copied by Wei Lin. And then I guess really my favorite I like that the gadget in what's his name's lair is basically just a metal pipe bolted to the bottom of his dinner table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I had one of those put in on my dinner table 2 years ago.
Note to self, don't sit down the opposite end from Jared. Sit off to the side. Yeah, that it basically it's just a pipe, and you shoot down one end, and the bullet ricochets down the pipe and goes into the person on the other end. It's like if you're an 80-year-old guy like Stromberg, and you're afraid you're going to miss, you don't. That way you can just shoot wildly, and you can still hit the guy in the gut, basically. Ugh. But I think the greatest
if he sits in the right chair, like yeah, he yeah, yeah. diagonal to you, whatever. So.
I think I'll sit over here. No. sit down. No, I don't want to sit there.
I'm just imagining, Mr. Bond, you have defeated me with your clever sitting off to the side strategy. Blast it! Would you care to sit there? Why would that be strong? But no reason. Just sit there.
It's comfortable.
It's a more comfortable chair. Yes, yes. But yeah, the greatest gadget is the Lotus. I just love the Lotus, man. I mean, it looks like it could actually work. That's what I've always loved. I love technological things that are really clever and interesting, but they look like they could actually work. And you know, like the Eagles on Space 1999 look like that NASA could build them. And it's the same thing with that Lotus submarine car. And it's got all the cool kind of gadgets like the Aston Martin had, but underwater. Like a torpedo thing and mines and all kind of cool stuff under there. Periscope, missile that goes up and hits the helicopter, blowing up what's her name, the big B movie star that's so famous. Where do y'all rank the Lotus in regard to the other vehicles and gadgets, John?
On the vehicle scale, it's up there. It's in the top two probably, just because it's so iconic. I think it's a very different looking vehicle, and it had so much cool stuff on it. It wasn't just like a vehicle with a one trick kind of thing. Mm. It had the submarine thing, and that had a lot of other practical stuff on it. So I love this. The Lotus.
Yeah. Jared?
Yeah, I agree with John. I think it's, if it wasn't for the Aston Martin DB5, it'd probably be the most recognizable car. Yeah. And I completely agree with you guys. And it was like really exciting. And I know I'm jumping ahead of a little movie, but you drove another Lotus and for your eyes only, and you're like, oh, it's another Lotus. Oh, I don't want to give the spoilers away. But.
Yeah. I still want to know how the fish got in there.
Yeah, that is weird. I tell you one thing I noticed is not on the list for this movie that it was also very cool.
Yeah.
Was the little jet ski. Remember he got a jet ski that he used to ride to Stromberg's. And what was kind of neat about that was kind of before the jet ski craze. Like that was one of those kind of very Bondy things. They kind of beat the craze, you know.
Oh, it was like, you know, the company that made them probably like tried to get it in the movie. And did.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know
the
story about it. I have to find that out. I bet the James Bond radio guys could tell us the back scoop on that. Moonraker, one of my favorite Bond films. I love Moonraker so much. I love it more every time I see it. Got Jaws back. But we got that great wrist dart gun. And now, John, because you like this one too, I'm going to ask you, what were the two things the wrist dart gun could do?
Well, it had a cyanide-coated bullet and an explosive armor-plated, armor-piercing bullet.
Right.
So basically an anti-personnel one and then like an armor-piercing one if you were, you know, using it against something more heavy-duty. Mm-hmm. And then it was a great, you know, Bond device. The other thing is, which isn't on the list but which I love in Moonraker, is the boat, Jared referenced earlier. You know, the boat, it's got mines, it's got the hang glider in it. Mm. The boat was really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I just like with the wrist dart gun that he can only load apparently one at a time, but he always has the one he needs. He uses each one once. and it just happens to be, he didn't have the cyanide one in when he needed an armor piercing one when that thing, the G-force thing was getting him. Because he'd have been like, damn it, the wrong dart, now I'm dead. You know what? I'd have been like, screw the cyanide. I'm just putting armor piercing ones in there. I figure armor piercing ones will work against armor and against people. You don't need the cyanide ones, man. Just blow a hole in them. I'd have thrown the other one away.
Isn't that the same? Is that the same watch, or did he get a different watch that had the C4 in it? I think it was a different. I think it was two different watches. In Moonraker, no, he had a watch in Moonraker that he had C4 in because he used it to blow the hatch to escape the taking off shuttle. Yeah, it's the Seiko wristwatch, and I have a very excited story about the Seiko wristwatch. By the way, as you guys probably know, if James Bond wears a watch in a movie, the secondary market for that watch goes through the roof. And even though it's just a pretty standard Seiko digital, that watch goes for a few hundred bucks because people want to collect the ones that Bond wore. And I found that watch at a yard sale 2 years ago for $1. And it's my prize, my Moonraker watch. Even though, unlike Van, Moonraker is possibly my least favorite James Bond movie.
Wow.
I still love the watch.
Man.
The watch is cool.
Yeah, that Seiko watch. Mine doesn't have C4 in it that I know of, but it's the only 007 watch that I own, and so it makes me happy.
But you haven't needed the C4 yet, see?
No.
True. Well, actually, there's been 6 or 7 occasions where I could have used that C4.
Well, he uses it at the very end, so he must have whatever he uses to blow something up. He has the other one back. But
Van?
Yes? Hello?
Keep going.
Okay. Occasionally we do have these little glitches. So I've got a trivia question for you about that then. Okay. He shoots Drax at the end with the cyanide rocket. He shoots the G-Force thing with the armor-piercing wrist rocket. What is the other thing he shoots with one of those watch darts in that movie?
Oh, that's too easy. I'm going to throw it to John because I feel like I'm taking candy from a baby at this point.
All right. What do you think, John? Do you remember? He may not have seen Moonraker anytime recently, so.
I started watching a couple months ago, but I didn't get to this part.
John, come on, man. You're being a real horse's ass here.
Did you get it? That was
you
a
shot the horse?
Yeah. The painting. He shot it.
That's right. He in the office.
Yes.
He was in the office and shot the horse painting. Okay.
Yeah. See, I gave you a clue. I wasn't just a complete jerk to a guy I just met. Well, it can be both, but.
Oh, that was very good. Very well played. All right. Yeah. Because didn't he just like barely miss M with it and it jammed in that horse's, the painting of the horse? Oh, boy. Let's see. We're going to zip along here. You didn't note the detonator explosive. Yeah, that's true. The laser guns. The poison pen. Now, Holly Goodhead had some CIA stuff. She had a perfume flamethrower and a poison pen. And he uses, Bond borrows the pen to use it to jab the snake in Brazil later, which is kind of neat. And then, that's pretty much all I feel like talking about from Moonraker. Anything else y'all want to mention from Moonraker? No. Yeah. All right. For your eyes only, the watch is back. Another Seiko. It's just a communicator, basically. The ATAC is the MacGuffin again. It's not really a gadget. Q has an identograph that lets him use basically Tandy TRS-80 Radio Shack computer technology to identify criminals, which is hilarious. If the criminal you're identifying has extremely distinct features and octagonal glass frames, then you can just absolutely recreate him on that thing. Not a lot really in For Your Eyes Only. For Your Eyes Only was much more of a sneaky spy Bond than it was a supervillain Bond. So there's not really many I want to talk about there. Anything you want to go into on For Your Eyes Only that I'm forgetting?
No, I don't think so. I think it was Roger Moore's finest movie, but that's not what we're here to discuss.
It is a good one. Yeah, we gave it high marks, I believe. Let's see, Octopussy again. You got a Seiko wristwatch. They must have had a long term contract with Eon. It's got video
in that movie. The fake horse trailer.
Yes,
he hides the little mini airplane in it. Was one of my favorite things.
The mini jet. Yeah, the mini jet is pretty cool. there's an acid-filled fountain pen. The Fabergé egg has a little homing beacon thing in it. There's a TV watch. The yo-yo saw is pretty awesome. I like the yo-yo saw, like two saw blades that are like a yo-yo that the villain, the flunky, uses. That's a pretty cool flunky weapon, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah. Yo-yo saw was another nickname. Never mind. I run this joke into the ground. But yeah, the yo-yo saw was very cool, and I don't want to gloss over that little acro jet at the beginning. I, like you said, you love the horse trailer, but man, that was the first movie I saw in the theater, the first Bond movie I saw in theater. Mm. And when I saw that little jet, man, that stuck with me for a long time. I love that jet.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. I agree. Let's see. That's about all from Octopussy that's noteworthy, I think. Again, y'all stop me if I'm leaving anything out. A View to a Kill didn't have much either. There's just basically Zorin has the walking stick that lets him send the steroid injector into horses. There's the butterflies that Mayday uses to kill people in the Eiffel Tower. Bond didn't really use many gadgets in that movie. He breathed air out of a tire, which I'm not even sure is possible. John and I noted in our previous talk about this one that it was a good thing they didn't have the nitrogen tires back then, or he'd be really screwed up.
But I seem to remember, like, wasn't there some sort of surveillance robot? But I think Q just used it at the end to peep on them in the shower.
Yeah, that rings a bell. But that whole movie.
But yeah,
I just want that whole. This is the one I despise, though, Jared. This is the one I just want to.
And I understand. Being the world's biggest Christopher Walken fan, it gets a pass from me. But I totally get it. I totally get why you don't date it.
And they had the cool Zeppelin in it, man.
And, no, they had a mini blimp. There was nothing Zeppelin. There most certainly was nothing cool about it. There was a little mini blimp. It looked like the kind you'd fly around inside a basketball arena to drop coupons or Chick-fil-A cows. It was not threatening in any way.
The blimp, much like Roger Moore, neither one of them were threatening. No.
The best part is when the blimp is coming up behind them and the people can't get away from it. I'm like, really?
Can't get away from the blimp. It's a blazing 5 miles an hour, and they're, yeah.
You could, like, throw a rock at it, or you could just, run away. I don't know.
Oh, man. If Bond had had the watch with the armor-piercing things, he could have taken that sucker out with one shot. Good gosh.
That's it.
Give him a yo-yo saw.
Oh, gosh. Jaws could have bit it and torn it to pieces. By the way, if folks are listening and you want to hear our expanded thoughts on all these movies, John and I have gone through the entire series in the back catalog, so just go to the whiterocket.podbean.com page, P-O-D-B-E-A-N, and you can find all 24 movies broken down, and we talk about all that stuff. Let's see, The Living Daylights, we get into probably my least favorite Bond here. I can't even remember his name.
You're treading on thin ice. It's Timothy Dalton, Dalton, and right. I'm going to have to straighten you out about
the worst Bond. But no.
That's incorrect, but
there are a few gadgets in this movie. What has he got that's got the little whistle that he whistles?
The keychain. That's okay, the keychain.
Yeah. Kind of messed up my list here, so it didn't say that. But yeah, the little keychain thing is pretty cool. Oh, there it is. Yeah, Phillips keychain. That's okay. Miniature binoculars. There's the I like the ghetto blaster. I call this a ghetto blaster. That's not really one he ever gets to use, but I think my favorite gimmicks, my favorite gadgets from this movie are the ones that the assassin, the milkman assassin, has. He's got milk bottle hand grenades, and he uses his earphones as a garrote. That's about it. Necros.
Yeah, he literally has like a Walkman, and he strangles the guy with it. That's pretty good. Because that's a very 1980s kind of thing to have on you. So.
Yes, it is.
You got to get, like, strangled to the soothing sounds of what band was that?
Was it Duran Duran?
No, it was this is gonna kill me. I'll remember like at 2 a.m. and call you guys.
Were they playing it in the background?
Yes.
I haven't watched it in a while.
It was playing while he strangled him. It's the Proclaimers? I think it might be the Proclaimers.
Okay.
I'm not 100% on that, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, you gotta love the Milkman. I mean, he kept it. He didn't use a lot of gadgets. He used, you know, maybe 2% of the gadgets, or maybe just a skim amount of gadgets.
Yeah, we got you.
Milk puns doing anything for you?
They're making me want to move on to License to Kill.
Are they utterly ridiculous?
Oh, geez, stop it. Dentonite. That's a great.
I see you've moved to License to Kill. Okay, we're moving.
Yes, Dentonite toothpaste. A camera gun, a laser Polaroid, exploding alarm clock, guaranteed never to wake up anybody who uses it. And a radio transceiver broom. So Q gets all the cool gadgets they actually use in this movie. Bond didn't really use a lot of Timothy Dalton Bond just never used a lot of gadgets that much, I guess. He was more hardcore, you know, spy Bond.
Yeah, wasn't he though? And then everyone's like, "Oh, I don't like him as James Bond." And then Daniel Craig comes and does the exact same thing, and they're like, "This is brilliant." And I'm like, "Yeah, obviously you didn't watch the Timothy Dalton film."
That's fair. I don't like him either.
Okay, well, at least you're consistent.
I'm not a huge Daniel Craig fan. Go back and listen to our Black Gala.
I give you consistency points.
I'm a Pierce Brosnan and Sean Connery man, with Roger Moore and Lazenby right behind him. GoldenEye, we get Brosnan, and he has a belt that has climbing stuff on it, which is pretty cool. We get a ballpoint pen. Oh, that's the one that, what's his name? Boris. Click, click, click.
Invincible.
It's click, click, click. Yeah, I like Boris a lot. That's a first Nightcrawler. I can't think of his name. Alan Cummings, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's favorite actor. He's got an Omega Seamaster, the first non-Seiko, non-Rolex watch. Ooh. With a laser cutter and a remote detonator. Nice. And there's a little door lock breaker. So not a lot of great gadgets, not a lot of memorable ones, but a lot of good stunts, I think, in the Brosnan ones, but not so much on the gadgets. At least not at first, but Lord, it goes downhill at one point. Anything about GoldenEye?
No,
not a lot of gadgets there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the wristwatch always kind of bothered me that he had like this super powerful laser. It seemed just a little too outlandish for me. I know that's kind of silly, giving some of the outlandish stuff that we've seen, but I don't know. I'm a stickler for my watches.
Yeah,
and that super powerful laser that was cutting through the bottom of the train car, I was like, I'll take it, but
yeah.
The ballpoint pen makes up for it. That thing was cool. So,
yeah, that was neat. I'd forgotten about that. Okay, well, Tomorrow Never Dies, he has an Ericsson mobile phone that does all kinds of cool stuff. It does stuff like the current phones that burst into flames. It's a Bond phone. It has an electric stun gun, which is pretty cool. It has a fingerprint scanner, an antenna lockpick. It has a flip-open remote control for his BMW. Yeah, because Brosnan's Bond drove a German car instead of a British car, which is interesting. He drove a BMW.
Drove it from the back seat.
From the back seat.
Using the phone to drive it.
I love that whole scene. I love that a lot. That's one of my favorite
Bond scenes. That was cool.
Yeah. Driving the little car around the garage from the back seat. I imagine Daniel Craig's Bond would watch that and be like, "Wimp!" He'd drive it from the front seat and And
I would have punched it.
Yeah, and any time a bullet zips past his ear, he just kind of grimaces and shrugs like a mosquito, you know, and then keeps going. I like how they actually incorporated some of those things, at least the design, if not the weapons, into their actual phones later on. So let's see. He had an Omega watch. It had a charge that could be detonated by turning the watch's dial. Let's see. Cigarette lighter bomb. Oh, a bunch of stuff that Waylon had. I'm not going to haul her stuff. Let's see. She had all kind of cool. She had way more gadgets than Brosnan had in his entire run as Bond, I think. She had all kind
all
of
in,
cool
all
stuff.
In one room. Yeah, yeah. She had.
Yeah, but of course, I'm on record. Waylon is my absolute favorite Bond girl, and I wanted a movie series with her so bad. Huge Michelle Yeoh fan. Huge Waylon fan. Anything else from... Yeah. Anything else from Tomorrow Never Dies? That took up like a whole page, more than a page. That's a bunch of stuff.
That's all Wei Lin's fault, man. She had all that stuff.
Yeah, China throws money at the problem rather than, yeah, they just make sure she's equipped with all the latest technology. The World Is Not Enough. Get another Omega Seamaster watch. Grappling hook, microfilament cable. He always has an interesting watch. I like the idea that they always go to the watch, you know, is with something clever. You know, they even came back to that inspector finally. Lockpick. Oh, he has the cool X-ray glasses in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was like part of the villain's plan, right? But then Q gives him the X-ray glasses. This is like the last thing James Bond needs is X-ray glasses. Mm-hmm. That see through clothes. And he's in that casino, and like everybody's got a gun. I love that everybody's got a hidden gun in there. He's just like seeing women in lingerie, and they got guns all down their legs and stuff. That's hilarious.
They all had very like sexy, like well matched lingerie, you know.
Yeah, and then a gun. Yeah, that's awesome. Let's see. He's got a jacket that inflates into a Kevlar bubble that he can roll around in. I noted there's a bagpipe. Is it like a gun or something? I can't remember. I don't remember. I don't remember
the bagpipe, except in Austin Powers. Yeah. Had knockout gas in it, so I don't know. I don't remember the bagpipe in that.
And then there's the helicopter-mounted saw. They took the yo-yo saw and put it underneath the helicopter on on an arm. So that was kind of...
That's actually a real thing, though. I mean, that, yeah? You know, they used it to attack him, but they actually are real helicopters with those on them for cutting back trees and stuff. So
I don't know if they make one that can actually cut a BMW in half, but that happened in the movie, that's for sure.
Nice try with it, but yeah. And then lastly for Brosnan, Die Another Day... He's got like a ring that vibrates and breaks glass, which I think is a great idea. That's a good Bond gadget to me because
it's
practical and it's just beyond probably what we could actually do right now. So that's pretty neat. And I like how he uses it, too, to kind of get out of that room that's got the water filling up or whatever. Let's see. He's got a surfboard with stuff in it. Another Omega Seamaster watch, explosive detonator, laser beam cutter, and he got a mini breathing apparatus. So, yeah, not a great movie, but he does have some pretty cool gadgets in it.
Worth a note too that since it was the 20th, they had all those Easter eggs. You know, he was in like the old supply closet, and you could see some of the old gadgets in the background with like the alligator. Conveyance, canoe. I don't know. The little alligator boat that he used in Octopussy's in the background, and
yeah.
And I always thought that was kind of neat. The little nods to the old gadgets that were sort of in the mothball storage facility. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that this is Bond's 20th movie, and it was his 40th anniversary, both at the same time. So they were averaging one every 2 years there. That's pretty. They had several one year. That made up for the gap between Dalton and Brosnan. Let's see. We finally get to Daniel Craig, who's not going to have as many gadgets because he's more about just making mean faces at stuff and then blowing it up.
He'll punch it.
Yes. He has a Sony Ericsson phone that has the various... it has a camera. Wow. They are really on the cutting edge.
They're really pushing Sony Ericsson.
I mean, the only cool gadgets in this movie is he has the keychain, which he uses to blow the guy up with at the airport.
Yeah.
And then he has the car when he's at the casino, and the car has like the thing, like the
defibrillator
in it, where, you know, and like the thing where they could do like his complete health diagnostic remotely,
That's believable to me.
That was pretty good.
I could totally see that. I mean, again, it's one of those things where you just happen to, of all the things that Bond has been threatened with death with, the one time that he requires a defibrillator is the one time he has a car that specifically has that.
That was little known fact. That was actually installed for Roger Moore and A View to a Kill for the actor because he was getting so old.
He was 58.
They wanted an AED on hand.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, they were like, wait a minute, we could make this part of the movie.
Well, that's right. There's so many occasions where people give themselves, resuscitation that way. You know, I mean. I'm thinking if you need to do that to your heart, you're probably not capable of actually doing it, you know?
Well, it could also be like a bad guy's in the passenger seat of the car. You turn it on, you shock him with it. It could be useful that way, too.
You could use it as a torture device. That's true, yeah. Speaking of torture devices, Quantum of Solace.
I got to clap.
Yeah, he has another cell phone that does some stuff. And
another
like the little
Sony Ericsson. What is the deal with that? Like, everyone on the planet owns an iPhone, and they're still pushing that Sony Ericsson.
Well, it's Sony. I mean, Sony's the big money.
Yeah, they own the property.
Yeah. They've got the little Quantum earpiece that they use in one of my favorite scenes. Honestly, the Quantum scene at the opera.
Opera.
Oh, that's one of my favorites. That saves that movie for me because two-thirds of Quantum of Solace is crap, but the one-third that's wrapping up Mr. White and all that and the Quantum guys, I love it. I love it. So that's pretty neat.
Not many gadgets, though.
No, not much. He doesn't need gadgets. And then that gets us to Skyfall. We only got one more after this. We're almost done. He has a Walther PPK that only lets him shoot it. Based on his palm print, which I would always, with the way technology works, I'd be like grabbing my gun to save my life, and it would be like, no,
it'd be in the middle of an update, updating,
updating software, exactly.
Oh, son of a,
no, it'd be like your hand's sweaty, and I recognize it.
Exactly. Honestly, I can't, gentlemen, I cannot use the thumbprint reader on my iPhone because it never works. It's never worked. I've had two iPhones that do that now, and neither one of them would recognize my thumbprint. So I can just imagine. Yeah.
Have you ever been one of the Men in Black? If that could be your problem.
Yeah, maybe so, and I've forgotten.
Because you have no fingerprints.
Yeah. No. I
just, all right, well.
I have such rough, dry skin that my thumbprint looks different every day, see, so whatever.
I think you're one of those aliens from V at this point.
Yeah, maybe so. I've always wondered about that.
But the palm print thing, I think that's weird that they were like, check it out, this is a cool technology thing in Skyfall, and they actually first introduced that in License to Kill. Yeah, the palm print gun in License to Kill. 89,
yeah, that's right.
So... But yeah, they did go low tech in Skyfall. I mean, they even like made it a point in the movie. You know, we don't really go in for exploding pins. We gave you a radio and some tickets. You know, to which a lot of people like really liked that. They were like, they want the stripped down James Bond. Yeah. But then, like, I was discussing this with my brother, and it's like Q's like, well, here's your radio and your gadgets. They're like, okay, Q, why do we pay you? Because you're doing the job of a secretary at this point.
That's right.
So.
I do like that he gets to tell the thing where he's like, we caught you, whatever his name is, because of radio, you know?
it's called a radio.
Yeah.
that was good.
That was pretty funny. And lastly, we get to 2015's Spectre, a movie I wanted to love so, so badly and ended up being like, But it's got a few things in it. It's got a tracking device so they can monitor where Bond goes. And I guess the only other thing is the dentist chair, like the dentist from hell chair, where they have the little drills that are supposed to do stuff to Bond. And John and I basically decided that he actually did, like, warp Bond's brain, and he dreamed the whole rest of the movie. Because that's pretty much where the movie goes off the deep end.
Yeah, didn't Bond have, like, it's not on our list here, but he had a watch that saved him in that moment. The girl did, like, armed the watch.
Yeah, he finally had an actual gadget, and he used it. It was explosive. Wasn't it something like Q told him he didn't have anything, it didn't do anything, and he's like, well, it'll blow up, you know, or something like
that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, like poor Spectre, man. I'm with you. I wanted to love it. I wanted to love it so bad.
Oh, I wanted to so bad. And there's a lot about it to love.
Maybe some gadgets would have saved it.
Maybe so.
No, it was...
Well, a third act would have saved it, but
just building up to an audience that's not very familiar with James Bond as to who Blofeld is. They're like, I'm actually Blofeld, and guys like me and you were like, cool, and everybody else in theater was like, what?
Who's that? Right.
Yeah.
And plus, not only that, but you and I are like, we know who that is, but that's like if the Donald Pleasant scenes at the end of You Only Live Twice had been in Dr. No.
Yeah.
It's too soon.
It's weird.
Yeah. We needed Bond fighting a villain inspector like Drax, you know, the not Guardians of the Galaxy Drax, not Bond Drax. And then just see what's his name, Waltz petting the cat, but never see his face. You build up to Blofeld.
Just, hey, here's Blofeld.
Boom.
And like I said, guys like us are like, cool. And everybody's like, who? And you're just okay.
Not to go too far down this rabbit hole, but I just want to say that I thought about it a lot. And what I've decided is that the director who did the last two, I forget his name now, Mendez, he reveled in bringing back little Easter eggs. And in Skyfall, it was kind of cool. But Spectre, the entire movie, was just a big basket of Easter eggs. And
yes.
That you can't make an entire movie out of a basket of Easter eggs. There has to be an actual plot besides...
Like all the Easter eggs were filled with like the cheapest jelly beans possible. Like there was no good candy in any of the Easter eggs, but there was a lot of them.
We can put this metaphor in the dentist chair and torture it all you like, dude. That's right. And much like Spectre, our show has gone off the rails in the third act. So
that brings you brought it home. Well done, sir.
Thank you. That's what I do. All right. So we've gone through pretty much all the gadgets we can think of. Do you want to let's reevaluate now, John? Looking back at all of them, what's your kind of overview as we bring this sucker in for a landing? What's your overview about the gadgets and how do you feel about them now? Like what stands out as great and bad now that you look back at the gadgets?
I think, again, the practical, like the watches consistently, there's good stuff there. And also kind of the practical things that were like the briefcase and those kind of things that were practical items but turned into cool gadgets. I really appreciated those. And then, of course, the vehicles we've talked about a good bit.
Mm-hmm. Jared, what do you think?
Hang on, I'm Twitter friending John right now. All right, done. I was totally listening to him too, honestly, and I feel the exact same way that John does. I really do. The more practical the gadget, the briefcase comes to mind, the watches come to mind, and the vehicles, you know, the Aston Martin DB5, the Lotus, and Little Nelly, all real things that exist. The more close it can be to reality, the better. I almost make it analogous to I don't know if either one of you ever collected G.I. Joe figures like I did, but like all the cool G.I. Joe stuff was the stuff that was based on real military vehicles, and they got real outlandish later on and lost its magic. Mm-hmm. Same thing with James Bond. The more grounded in reality they are, the more fun they are. I think I agree with him, you know, with every single one that he mentioned. And then I do like to throw in that keychain from The Living Daylights. It seems like that would be a really handy thing for a spy to have. It was very versatile with its unlocking and its explosiveness, and it had poison gas. And you know, you could also whistle just to find it.
That's right.
But practical as hell, you could put it in your pocket and totally believable. And I think those are the ones that work the best.
And I think the one that we didn't mention, because it's not really a gadget, but it was used that way, is in Live and Let Die, Roger Moore is shaving, and he has his cigar and his shaving cream can, and he uses that to fry a snake.
Right.
And that's like
That's not even a gadget. You could do that in your house right now.
Exactly.
And I did. I did. Like, 7-year-old Jared was like, I'm going to see if that works. Shaving cream, not so much, but hairspray.
Should burn the house down with hairspray, no doubt about it.
Well, that's – you can't prove it, but
– So what do we want to see now as we look toward Bond 25 coming out in a year or two? What would be – we want to see – I imagine we want to see, like, another cool watch – I mean, you know, clearly Daniel Craig, his Bond has been very minimal, right, on the gadgets. Mm-hmm. But and his cars are more like super duper racing, you know, Lamborghini type, Ferrari type, whatever type cars than they are, you know, submarines and whatever. But would we like to see him go back to some cool gadgety cars and maybe a cool watch and maybe a cool something else? Or do we want to keep going the direction it's going? Either one.
I mean, I love to see him do another cool gadget car. I mean, I think there's stuff that the cars could do, you know, really, really high-tech, sophisticated stuff that cars could do, and sophisticated weapons that cars could use. You know, maybe he has like multiple drones that pop out of the car and see where the bad guys are, and he, you know, and he's seeing them from different angles. That kind of thing, I think, is, I could see something like that.
That's a good point. I agree. We like to see him with a watch. I mean, wearables are the thing now. I'd like to go back to do a little more Tomorrow Never Dies, where he had a lot of functions with his phone, because again, that's sort of, we live in the age of a smartphone. There's no reason for 007 not to have a souped up one with multiple capabilities, but it totally looks like a regular phone. And obviously it would be a Sony Ericsson, because that's what everybody carries.
Yeah, apparently.
But yeah, no, I think if you did like a phone and a watch, I love John's idea of drones. Drone technology is good. I like the idea of souped up car. I will give full respect to Spectre for him taking the other guy's car and, you know, trying out the switches, and it had the music, and he's like, no.
That was good.
That was great.
That was good.
In fact, he had to meld to the other agent's taste was fantastic. That was a great part of the movie. But yeah, I'd say car watch, phone. Love John's idea of the drones. I wish I'd thought of it. Yeah, I think that's a good formula.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've covered it all pretty well. That's good. That's good. So we got it all in about an hour, 25, 30 minutes. So I guess we will wrap up from here. Be sure to tune back in the weeks to come. We got some more cool Bond stuff coming along. We got some more cool other stuff coming along. And I guess the Rocket's going to get out of here for another episode. Jared, we appreciate you coming on for the first time. It was kind of cool to have a three-way conversation for a change and bring some different perspective in here. Hope you didn't hate the process too much.
No, I had a blast. Thanks for having me on. I apologize to you or John that if I just ran at the mouth a little too much, but you know, I get fired up about 007. So that's going to happen.
That worked great. John, thanks as always.
That was good. It was fun.
All right. Well, the Rocket going to get out of here, and we will see you guys down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.